This is Twit.
Google held its fall hardware event yesterday morning. And let's just say there were zero surprises. We literally, I mean, save for a couple of very small details, we knew everything in and of itself, which in and of itself is no surprise because Google's very bad at holding surprises. Joining us to share his take on the hardware announcements, talk a little bit about the Pixel 5 and more is David Ruddock from Android Police. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hey, Jason.
Good to see you, man. So we got to start with the flagship, and I'll go ahead and throw that in air quotes because when you're talking about flagships, usually you're talking about like super premium, like top of the line, which is not to say that the Pixel 5 is a bad phone. I'm very interested. I've ordered it already, but it's like a flagship, but not like a premium flagship. Are you excited with what Google showed off here? Do you think Google's smart and kind of going in a different direction with their top of the line? What are your thoughts?
You know, I think that we had a good idea. This is what they were going to do. I think that there are reasons they did it. And I think those reasons may not be readily apparent to, you know, everyday consumers who are looking at this and saying, you know, I want a Google phone and I want it to be the best phone it can possibly be. And, you know, those fans are obviously maybe a little miffed. Overall, though, you know, I feel like sentiment is cautiously optimistic about this phone so far in terms of the features and in terms of what they had to get rid of and what they've added. Granted, they haven't added much, but I think that the strategy makes sense from Google's point of view in terms of sales. That's what Google's end goal here is. They've made it very clear they want to run a hardware business. This isn't a hobby for them anymore. And so the way they're trying to do that is A, by getting in more carriers. So the Pixel 5 will be sold on Verizon, will be sold on AT&T. It won't be sold on T-Mobile. But between Verizon and AT&T, you've got, you know, the majority of wireless subscribers in America. And it will be sold at a price that is substantially lower than fare from Samsung and Apple, at least in terms of their top of the line phones. That said, there is definitely going to be some competition for this phone. And I think that we'll see more phones kind of enter the arena at this price range. As far as what Google's done that's unique, I think that what consumers are still going to see is a great camera experience, you know, unblemished software. There's no unwanted advertising or things like that on it. It gets updated very quickly. It's secure. It's simple. And I think that that still is mostly Google's core marketing message and has been throughout the entirety of the Pixel being a thing. But I don't know that that necessarily shakes things up enough. I'm not sure I see a huge avenue for success here that Google previously hasn't tried to explore. And I think that by coming down at the premium tier, you know, Google is doing something new, sure, but I think their biggest success has been at the sub-premium tier with the A series of phones. And those just seem more interesting. The Pixel 5 looks fine. But if I'm, you know, if somebody's asking me which Pixel phone should I get, I'd be like, well, if money is at all a concern, I mean, the 4A and 4A 5G look pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. The 4A was really impressive. My wife ended up picking it up and she was just telling me last night, she was like, I love this phone. I'm so happy. She had moved over to the OnePlus 8 for a while and she couldn't stand it. She's like, oh, it feels good to be back at a Pixel again. She wouldn't even know, you know, she doesn't really care whether it's the top of the line. She just likes Google's approach on software and hardware. And that ends up working for her. And I enjoyed it as well. Now, what they got rid of in the 5, some of the things that they got rid of, no more Soli. So the radar up top, which no surprise there. It was kind of a feature that was kind of, you know, was a little bit of an eye roll feature to begin with. Sounds like maybe no more Pixel neural core. Did they build that into the device in a different way or is that just gone altogether? I felt like that was kind of a strange omission.
So it is gone. We did confirm that with them. And the reason it's gone, I suspect, is A, cost. You know, that's definitely just something. More silicon, more money, and more complexity. The other reason is I think that maybe Google was trying something with this neural core, and it turned out that the way the industry was moving anyway and the way it has been moving is it putting incredibly advanced DSPs with digital signal processors, which are what power most of the AI on your phone, in smartphone chips anyway. Qualcomm's been doubling or quadrupling their AI performance with basically every generation of chip. And I think that maybe Google tried to get out in front of that in a way that probably didn't end up making sense. You know, they've brought the next generation assistant to Pixel 4a, which uses a, you know, pretty, you know, standard middle of the road chipset. And that brings things like, you know, on-device voice processing that's near instantaneous. So I think that the neural core probably was only necessary for a few things Google maybe aspirationally wanted to do, perhaps with the camera. And at this point, though, the DSPs and the ISPs, the image signal processors for the camera on these chips, like I said, they're so advanced and there's so much investment in making them more advanced with each passing year. I don't think that extra hardware, unless Google, you know, can really build a compelling story around why it needs that, was probably necessary anymore in any strict sense.
Yeah. All right. That makes a lot more sense. Now, you actually wrote about yesterday the inclusion of millimeter wave 5G in the Pixel 5. You're calling it a mistake. Boom. Dropping the hammer on 5G. Why do you say that?
Yowza.
Yeah, I think it's a boneheaded move. Just straight up. I think Google was told by carriers, and this is what I asked them about this. I said, hey, so what's the deal? You know, we know millimeter wave 5G is a new, very limited and very expensive technology to put in something the size of a smartphone. And so I've talked to people in the industry before, analysts who say, you know, the cost of implementing a millimeter wave in a phone can be, you know, $60, $80, $100 and just in parts. So it's not insubstantial. And so when I asked Google about this, they said, well, all of our carrier partners really told us they wanted more phones with millimeter wave in them. And I don't think that's untrue. I think that the degree to which it's true is really hazy. I think Verizon, of course, wants it because they only have millimeter wave 5G. That's their only 5G technology right now. But AT&T and T-Mobile have very limited millimeter wave networks. AT&T's is targeted squarely at its corporate customers, and they've been very clear about that from day one. AT&T is all about business millimeter wave. They want to target areas, geographic areas, where they know they have corporate customers who want this technology. T-Mobile says millimeter wave is part of their layer cake strategy. They have deployments in Los Angeles and New York. But T-Mobile's really just kind of dipped their toe and is looking at what the technology can do. T-Mobile's far more invested in its mid-band 5G, which Pixel 5 supports, and is honestly way faster than most people need already on their smartphones. And so that really begs the question, you know, aside from Verizon, where, you know, Verizon has its own model of the Pixel 5 that it will sell. It's not any different. It's just got a locked bootloader. But why did Google decide that the unlocked version of the Pixel 5 in America needs millimeter wave when every other country on Earth where the Pixel 5 will be sold, no models will have millimeter wave? And the answer we're getting so far is basically Google felt pressured by carriers. And that to me is just so backward. And it's already resulted in price disparities. In Canada, the phone is $100 cheaper after conversion for the Pixel 5 than it is in America. And I guarantee that's millimeter wave. And this is an experience that nobody's going to get any value from. The millimeter wave coverage in the entire United States is negligible. If you were to put it on a coverage map, you couldn't see it. It fundamentally doesn't exist. So outside, you know, certain testing environments where people deliberately go and look for this coverage, they're not going to get it. There's no sign that's going to change in the next 2 or 3 years in a big way either. And so Google threw money into this phone that it really didn't need to and made it more expensive. And I just think that's silly.
I agree. That's really interesting to hear the cost difference as well. And it's not just a cost difference between countries. The US and Canada are actually going to be receiving this device later than other countries. Usually it's the opposite, right? Now we're on the other side. So maybe it's, you know, getting a taste of our own medicine or whatever, but we get it at the end of October. Other countries are getting it mid-October. Does that have a role to play? Like, does the millimeter, like, that seems to be one of the, you know, differentiators between potentially between the devices that we're getting and the devices that everyone else is getting. Could that be a factor in that delay?
Oh, it's absolutely a factor. You're totally right. I don't think millimeter wave has delayed the phone. I think the issue is Google's supply chain for the US was disrupted in a way where the global supply chain wasn't as disrupted. And that's kind of sad to me because Google is the only major smartphone manufacturer, and I say major in air quotes, that is still having these supply chain issues. Why can they not execute on this? The Pixel 4a was delayed by like months. It was ridiculous. Samsung has launched everything it planned to on time. Granted, Korea's had a lot easier time with COVID because they've done a great job managing it. But, you know, Apple, it doesn't sound like we'll have any major delays. They'll be delayed by a few weeks. And I imagine there will be no supply issues for them. There will be plenty of iPhones. And basically every other smartphone manufacturer seems to be operating business as usual at this point. You know, LG, Motorola, all of them seem to be doing okay. But Google is really struggling. You know, the Chromecast with Google TV sold out day one on the Google Store. And it's a simple little TV dongle. How could they not make enough of them? And I think that kind of speaks to Google's lack of experience in being a product manufacturer still. They're still relatively new at this, and the growing pains have become much more clear with stress that that COVID has put on, you know, the company.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the Chromecast with Google TV, not Android TV. Still trying to figure out what the difference is there. I guess we're moving to Google TV now. One thing that struck me about that is Stadia. Stadia is Google's cloud gaming system or service, rather. The Chromecast Ultra was shipped with a certain packaging of the Stadia game system or whatever, with the controller and everything. So it was compatible. But now the Chromecast Ultra is not for sale anymore because we have this new Chromecast with Google TV device. But it is not compatible until the middle of next year. And I read that news and it just kind of infuriated me. It seemed like yet another example of Google not taking its efforts seriously. It just makes it kind of seem like Google doesn't care about Stadia in this regard. And, you know, the people who were worried once Google rolled out Stadia about like, oh, yeah, we'll give it 2 years and it's going to, you know, be on the Killed by Google website. Maybe there's some truth to that. I feel like Google should have come out of the gate supporting this thing right away with the replacement device when the other device already did. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that there's no excuse for what happened here. Google really screwed up on this. And I'm sure that somewhere at some layer of Google, there's a good reason for this. And not say it's an excusable reason, but a good technical reason, as in we just can't make this work right now. And I'm sure that's, you know, once again, related to, you know, the difficulties of work from home, especially when it comes to hardware. That said, you know, the whole point of Stadia is that to decentralize the gaming experience, and the fact that you're launching this product without compatibility is absurd. That to me is like totally nuts that they couldn't achieve that. When I saw that, I was like, there's no way that's true. When Ryan, you know, when he's reviewing, he's like, yeah, they said they won't have Stadia at launch and won't for a while. And it's just like, are they serious? That was incredibly hard to believe. But they need to say more about this. There needs to be more public discussion of what's going on there. And I think that Google needs to feel a little pressure on that issue.
Yeah, agreed. There were a few more hardware devices. Just kind of wrapping up, final thoughts. Like, did anything else kind of excite you? Are you looking forward to the new Google? Oh, no, I want to call it Google Home, the Nest Audio. What do you think there?
Couldn't care less about it. It's honestly, it's a nice visual update. I think it looks very good. I love what the home team does with hardware. I think their stuff all looks really cool. And it totally gels with the new branding. And I hope we get a new version of the Max and Mini speakers that also look like this to, you know, better fit in. I love that their hardware aesthetic on these speakers has been basically, it should look like an itty bitty piece of furniture in your home, which I think is, you know, it helps it fit in and it helps it, you know, look aesthetically pleasing. Overall, what I came away most excited about is the product that we're going to have to wait the longest to get, which is the 4A 5G. I'll be reviewing the Pixel 5 for Android Police. I won't be doing the 4A 5G, but I think the 4A 5G blends everything good about the Pixel 4A and the Pixel 5 and compromises in ways that are so like totally acceptable to me. I don't need wireless charging. I don't need an IP rating. I'll live without them. But it gets a good chipset. It gets good 5G. It doesn't have millimeter wave, but that's useless anyway. Nobody cares except for the Verizon version, which is $100 more. Everybody should note. And I think that's the product that Google is going to have. I think barring any weird issues, barring any kinds of problems on paper, that to me is the perfect mid-range Pixel phone. It steps up from the 4A in the right ways, and it steps down from the 5 in the right ways too. Not to say I think the 5 will be bad. I just think the 5 is a little much money for what it is, you know, and we'll see after I use it. But I think the 4A 5G to me was the star